Tango Tango Papa 2016, May 15th, 2018.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Raphine, Virginia. So I looked and it's been not quite a month. I think the last podcast was on the 22nd of last month, and today's the 15th, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. So I guess about three weeks since the last podcast. Not quite a month. So, you know, life goes on. Nothing really different, or, you know, not a whole lot. I mean, there's little things here and there that change, but as far as my existence goes. But overall, I just work and, you know, to go home periodically and take about 5 complete full days off and then come back to work and kind of do it all over again. So, let's see. So, trying to think if anything has happened. I did, you know, from an electronics purchase standpoint, I went ahead and I replaced the Verizon MiFi Jetpack. I was looking for that name, Jetpack, that I had, because I replaced it, I don't know, it's been maybe upwards of 2 years, or certainly over a year is the last time I replaced it. And on that unit, the battery kind of had the same problem as I had with the original one, the original Jetpack that I had. The battery was swelling to the point where the back didn't really want to stay on. And then I was having problems with it kind of arbitrarily just turning off. And, I was going to have to probably order a new battery to replace it. And then I got to talking to this Verizon, in some truck stops you have Verizon resellers located in the truck stops. And at one time there were Sprint resellers, but those all went away. Now it's just pretty much Verizon resellers that are in truck stops. And so the guy was there, and I kind of struck up a conversation with him, and I'd already been thinking, well, I'm gonna, you know, if this thing keeps shutting down, I'm gonna have to replace it anyway. So come to find out, I think I, you know, for a $40 fee, basically, I was able to get a new Verizon Jetpack, basically to, you know, sign, you know, keeping my unlimited plan, but sign up for another 2-year contract, which that's fine because I intend to keep the thing anyway. So that's what I did, and this one so far has functioned flawlessly. It has not shut arbitrarily, just turned off like the other one did. And I even had that problem occasionally with the first one. The first one that I had was kind of giving me the same sorts of problems. So, and, you know, and even if it didn't turn off, then sometimes there were times when it would, both of them would get to the point where there was no internet connection and I would have to manually turn it off and turn it back on. So far, this new one, I've not had that problem with it at all. It's functioned exactly the way, you know, I turned it on, and then the only thing I've done is periodically plug it in and then unplug it. It's probably my own fault that the battery was swelling up on the other two units, prior to the prior two models. because I would leave it plugged in all the time. But on the other hand, you know, you can leave a laptop battery plugged in all the time. And other devices that have batteries, you can leave them plugged in, and you know, really probably no ill effect seems to happen. But with the lithium ion batteries, they do sometimes swell. So and those jetpacks seem to be particularly prone to it, even though they're different models, probably manufactured by different companies. But in any case, this one now, maybe they've perfected the design of them enough, and they've been able to also reduce the engineer, you know, do the all the engineering and reduce the price of it to the point where, you know, basically the $40 was covering the cost of the unit. Although, you know, they did make me sign up for another 2-year contract, which was fine. So I don't know if the representative there, that reseller, thought that the $40 probably carried the or covered the cost of the actual unit. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but it probably did. I'm assuming it probably did. So you know, in this new unit, it doesn't have as good. It's got a little screen. It's not touch screen, but it's got a little color LCD screen, and that's, I can see that it's not quite high resolution as the prior unit. The original one that I had was monochrome. It just had a monochrome screen. So this one, you know, and I'm not, the only thing the screen's good for is to read, you know, kind of look at the, because it does have a little operating system, and you can kind of go through the various functions of it, and it, of course, it displays the Wi-Fi password, and there, you know, and so I always just keep the, whatever the password that came with it. It does have some sort of a provision where the end user can change the password if they wish, but I really don't care. I just leave the password. Whenever I get one of these units, I just leave the password with whatever it was, and you know, I'm sure they've got some sort of way of randomizing the password for each unit. I don't think they would use the same password for each unit, but so I just leave it as it was, and then it's, you know, so it's basically the thing is just, after I got it from the guy at the truck stop, it's functioned flawlessly ever since, so I haven't had to reboot it or anything like that. It's just worked, so that's good. So I knew that I was probably going to have to do something with it, and just replacing the battery wouldn't have been enough, because like I say, it even when before the battery started swelling, it was giving me some problems. You know, it would just, and probably related to the fact that I was changing cells all the time, and so it would just periodically, it would just turn itself off for whatever reason, and I never could figure out why. Although it's possible that the battery was, you know, had swollen to the point where, you know, bumping up and down the road, it might have lost contact. The unit would not function simply plugged in without, you had to have the battery in place before it would function. So it's got that kind of a design, which is kind of a common design for, you know, any kind, you know, laptops or whatever. A lot of times you would have to have the battery in place before the, even, you know, even though you were plugging it into AC power. So, you know, in this case, of course, it uses the, it has a micro USB connector, and so, you know, even though it came with its own USB powered AC power adapter and a little short cord, I didn't even need that. I was just able to plug it right in using my existing power adapters and cords that I used with the old one. So got that, and that, as I say, so far that is functioning flawlessly. That's been a few days ago since I got it. I think I was in I believe I was in Effingham, Illinois. So, in the meantime, I have been, I was not aware of it. I just kind of bumped into it, but on YouTube, there are audiobooks. I don't know whether they're legal or not. They've been there for a while. You know, I've bumped into, you know, so they're the ones that I've bumped into, of course, were kind of science fiction. And so there's quite a number of Arthur C. Clarke audiobooks on there, as well as other science fiction authors. And so right now I'm, you know, there's this, I was kind of vaguely aware of it, Arthur C. Clarke in conjunction with this other author. Or Arthur C. Clarke wrote the first, there's this, what was it, just like Rama something or other. R-A-M-A, it's like something Rama. And then, you know, and so then Arthur C. Clarke, I think, wrote that by himself, the first Rama book. And then there were three sequels that sort of extended the story out. And so that Arthur C. Clarke, I think, kind of provided the outline, and then this other author, I get the impression that there's this other science fiction author that did the bulk of the writing, and then maybe Arthur C. Clarke did some of the editing. But in any case, it sort of extended the story out, and so there were altogether four books that made up this Rama, sort of a Rama series. So you had the original one, I guess I should look up the name of it. All you have to do is type in Rama, and you could probably find it. Although there's a lot of other YouTube videos that are sort of, you know, kind of reviewing the book or whatever, shorter videos. These are very long. You know, they're like 8, 9, 10, 11 hours long because they're audiobooks. And so, you know, and then you have, they're split so that, you know, you can have part one and part two, and then that may make up a section. So I'm going to have to, now it's bugging me, I'm going to have to do a quick little search and find the name of that. Let's see here. So if this will load. Okay, let's make a new thing here. All right, waiting. Oh, gosh. I should change this. It says waiting for MSN. I don't want MSN. Let's go to Google. But it won't let me. Let's try a different. Oh, there it goes. Come on. Do something. See, Google. I should change my default. Let's, come on. Google's not wanting to, there, well, no, MSN's still trying, there it goes, Google. Isn't that ridiculous, these things, you know, when you open up a thing and then it tries to load all this crap? I guess they're trying to get you to buy something. Let's see, Rama, Arthur C. Clarke. All right, Rendezvous with Rama. That's the first one. And then you had, so you had Rendezvous with Rama, and then Rama 2, and then Garden of Rama, and then the final one that I'm listening to now is Rama Revealed. And I finished the third one earlier this evening, and then I started listening to the fourth one. And so they're very interesting. You know, it's very lengthy. excuse me. The material is, you know, it's kind of very lengthy, but it's kind of an interesting premise. Part of this was written in the early, I think sometime in the 70s, the original Rendezvous with Rama, and that was all by Arthur C. Clarke. And then the other three that followed that in the series were written in conjunction with this other author. But again, I think that at that point Arthur C. Clarke was just kind of editing and providing the guy with an outline, and then this other author I believe wrote most of the book, or did a big chunk of the work. But in any case, it's very interesting. So, and of course the gist of it, if you haven't listened to it, the idea is that it sort of takes place in this giant alien spaceship that is sort of set up as a, you know, with various habitats. You know, so the first book, this alien spacecraft, at first they think it's some sort of an asteroid entering the solar system. And then once it gets closer, then they realize that it's not an asteroid, but it's a giant cylinder, you know, like 50 kilometers long, and I believe it's 20 kilometers, you know, so it's a cylinder. So it's 20 kilometers in diameter and then 50 kilometers long. And so you can kind of convert that to miles. And so that, you know, and the whole thing is spinning along the cylinder's axis, so that it provides, basically, it generates gravity, because you've got gravity, of course, in the center. Think of it as a cylinder, thimble. Not a thimble, but what you'd get at, like a sewing. The little cylinder, or there's a name for that, and I can't think of it, that, you know, if you buy thread, it comes on like a spindle. And so you think of that, you'd put that on a thing and spin it, or, you know, like toilet paper, you'd put the toilet paper on a spindle sticking straight up and then pull on it, then the cylinder that's formed by the toilet paper spins. Well, the idea is that you have a spinning cylinder like that, and it would create gravity, or, you know, basically, or, you know, it's really, people argue whether that's actually gravity or not. It's pretty much the same thing. You could say it's centrifugal force, but then people say, well, there's no such thing as centrifugal force. It's simply momentum, you know, doesn't like to travel at an angle. So I don't know if you've ever had the experience of putting water, maybe when you're a kid, maybe put water in a bucket. If you remember those, you had your little plastic bucket when you were a kid, sand bucket. Put water in it, and then if you spin it fast enough over your head, the water stays in the bucket. And that's basically the force that you can kind of create. Basically, you're creating sort of artificial gravity if you spin that bucket up over your head. And it's basically, it's the equivalent, I think, of the same thing. It is basically the same force, I think, in essence. You know, even though people argue, well, gravity, you know, is gravity a push or a pull? I believe it's a push. You know, functionally, it's the same. You know, we don't really know. But I believe that gravity, it makes more sense to me that gravity is a push. You know, the what we feel as gravity is simply the force is kind of pushing down on us, towards the mass of the Earth, as opposed, you know, we're always taught that the mass of the Earth is sort of pulling on us, and I think it's the other way around. I think that the space around us is actually pushing us down, or, you know, or kind of to a certain extent, you can think of it that way, although it's, you know, the analogy sort of breaks down a little bit. So in any case, but, you know, is it a push or a pull? I believe it's a push. But it's the same force, basically, that, you know, why does, what causes stuff to want to not go at right angles, even in, you know, whether you're on Earth or on the surface of the Earth or out in space, if something is spinning, then you have that force that wants to go off in a straight line instead of, you know, and if you curve, if it's in a curve and not in a straight line, then, you know, if something's restraining it, then it has there's a definite pull or a push. You know, it wants to go in a straight line. So that's basically that's the idea, creates artificial gravity. And so if you could, you know, if you remember watching the 2001 A Space Odyssey movie, which that's, I did watch that again while I was home the last time. That is a spectacular, that movie's over 50 years old at this point. Really a spectacular movie. Of course, a lot of the stuff is dated a little bit. You know, some of the ideas that they had, were dated somewhat, but, there's no more Howard Johnsons, there's no more Pan Am, there's no more Bell System. I guess those were probably the product placements in the movie, but, those corporations are all gone, but, some of the ideas are, stewardesses and what have you, that's all gone, but, the space station itself, with the people walking in it, and it's circular, the thing spinning, that is absolutely viable. You could, you could create a spaceship. You could, as long as you have basically what amounts to a, where the words right on the tip of my tongue, it's not centipede. The thing that, I'll think of it in a minute. It's the thing that they train the astronauts in where they spin them around and then they can, get up to like 8 G's or whatever, 8 gravities, centrifuge. So basically you can have a centrifuge that's spinning on an axis in space and then around the, you spin it at the right speed, and if thing's big enough, then you can create a 1G gravity, environment that would pretty closely, depending on the size of your centrifuge, the diameter of it, the bigger it would be, the better off it would be, the more natural it would behave. Like normal gravity pushing down on the sphere of the Earth, it would be, you get the normal gravity, although you do have what's called a Coriolis effect, where if you try to shoot something, or let's say you have a waterfall that's, then things are going to try to curve off to the, opposite direction of the spin, because stuff wants to go in a straight line. And it's called the Coriolis effect. So in any case, that's what the Rama series is about, and it's it kind of goes through in great detail the lives of the people that end up on it, kind of living in it, and it's all very interesting. So it's a mix of these people living together and kind of what they're going through personally, as well as sort of you have the sci-fi aspect of it, and Arthur C. Clarke and this other guy kind of predicting what the other, what other life forms there might be and how they might live. And so it's quite imaginative. But then again, it's interesting, the whole, with science fiction, what ends up, the science fiction, you can always tell the science fiction, approximately when it was written. Because if you go, you go back to Arthur C. Clarke is a great example. You go back to Arthur C. Clarke's early writings, he started publishing short stories to begin with in the late 30s or 40s and then early 50s. He was publishing a lot of stories in the science fiction magazines, like Amazing Stories, and there were some other ones. I think Amazing Stories is really the only one that comes to mind, but there were other ones, and they were just published short stories in magazine form every month, and so he was writing a lot of short stories, and those are available on YouTube as well in audiobook form, and there's several compilations of them, and they're very interesting little stories. So, but you take Arthur C. Clarke, you can kind of tell when the stories were written, because it was the science fiction is a sort of a projection of the time that it was written. And especially, that's especially true if there are people involved, you know, the characters in the thing and how they're sort of the details of how they're interacting with each other. You get, you know, they're sort of a projection of almost like, the current culture, or especially the current pop culture. And so if you look at the 2001 A Space Odyssey movie, directed by Stanley Kubrick, if you look at that, and then, you have the Pan Am, and so you had that was done in the 60s, and so you had the stewardess kind of, what they thought a stewardess might be on a, it's not an airliner anymore, but a space liner, and it looked very, it was just a projection of what the stewardesses looked like in the 1960s on the air jetliners. You know, and then, you know, same thing with, you know, like Howard Johnson's was big in the 60s, you know, as far as restaurants and travel and that type thing. And, phone booth, of course, they were kind of thought about, well, you know, they're going to have video phones instead of just a telephone. They show the guy using a video phone, and then in the spaceship itself later in the movie, they've got these pads that they're sort of watching a video on, and they're supposed to be flat, kind of flat pads placed on a table or on a counter. And that was the idea. And so, and a lot of that kind of came to pass. So, but a lot of it didn't, the only thing, or a lot of the stuff in 2001 was very, and that's one of the best movies ever, in my opinion. A lot of the stuff was, as far as the spaceship, the spaceships and space station, that was all pretty realistic and probably could be done. The vehicles that they're flying around on the moon, those are all probably pretty realistic. The part that's, where they sort of really missed was, they didn't really predict the miniaturization of electronics, because, you got the scene, whereas the scene in Hal's brain when, the Dave Bowman character is, makes it back into the spaceship and he starts dismantling Hal's brain, it was a beautiful scene. It's just a gorgeous scene, with all those, kind of red colored memory modules sort of lit from the inside. Gorgeous scene, and then you get that, the reflection off of his space helmet, but, the front of his space helmet, the visor, but, in the future, of course, we're living in the future now. All the electronics just got miniaturized. so they missed on that a little bit. And then the other part that I think that they're going to miss permanently on is machines cannot become sentient. I don't believe that's not possible. It's not possible. The machine can't, there's nothing there. It's just, it's just electronics. And the idea that the sentience sort of arises from, if you just get the right neural networks programmed in there, that somehow it's just, awareness is going to arise out of that. That's sort of like the cargo cults. And the idea of and I've talked about that before, the idea of a cargo cult was, back during, I think, World War II, they were dropping, I think the U.S. was probably dropping supplies, and so they were dropping supplies on an island somewhere, and, so this, the native people ended up forming a cult where they would sort of, they, you know, make a bamboo, sort of a mock bamboo airport, and then do their little rituals, you know, kind of praying to the gods that an airplane would come along and, you know, kind of drop the supplies. And this was well after the war. You can actually look up Cargo Cult, and there's some clips on YouTube, you know, where they're, where they actually filmed them doing it. And so that's basically the same thing. You're expecting something to just happen. And, you know, a consciousness does not arise from electronics. Or, you know, it just doesn't, it doesn't happen that way. I'm sorry. I hate to break the bubble. You can, you know, maybe you can mimic it. Now, in defense of 2001... they did. They didn't really say that. They really strongly suggested that Hal was conscious, but you know, the computer. But on the other hand, they, you know, at one point they said, "Well, people argue over whether the thing is just mimicking, you know, consciousness, or could it be really conscious?" You know, and people disagreed about it. So I think you can probably make it seem like it is to a certain extent. But, you know, if you, you know, you get your algorithms increasingly more sophisticated, maybe you can make it seem like it is. But at the end of the day, it isn't. You pull the plug and it, you know, the power goes off. So it's not, there, you know, there's nothing there. I think there's more to it than, you know, simply having, you know, your neural networks in the right configuration sort of mimicking a human brain, or mimicking even an ant brain. You know, an ant is, you know, has some kind of awareness. Your dog's got some kind of an awareness. Even a mouse has got, you know, kind of a mouse awareness. You know, and but a computer, sorry, it doesn't have it. You know, you can make, you know, computers can be very sophisticated, and they can do certain things really well, a lot better than human beings can. One of the other things, by the way, that they really got right in 2001 was the idea that, the voice recognition idea. Of course, that had already been, voice recognition has been around for a long time. You know, get your computer to recognize a voice. That's been around forever. And it didn't just start with Star Trek. You know, it was around way before then. That idea was around, I think, not long after computers first made, you know, kind of appeared on the scene. They had that idea that you could, instead of being, you know, typing to it or whatever, you're putting in punch cards that were appropriately punched, that you would be able to simply talk to it. And the computer could recognize it. Well, they got that right. And then they had the idea, you know, which is a brilliant thing in the 2001 Space Odyssey movie. You know, the idea that the computer could sort of read lips. And I think that that's probably could happen. You know, where, you know, you could have a kind of a lip reading type program. So, you know, I don't know how well it would work from the side, you know, because they kind of showed it from the side in the movie. So I don't know how well that would work, but, you know, as opposed to full on, but hey, it's a movie. But that's a really well done movie. Amazing movie. You know, and the special effects really hold up to anything that's done today. You know, some of it, you know, maybe the idea is a little hokey or whatever. But overall, the thing is extremely imaginative. Excellent cinematography is just amazing. And, you know, so if you got a Blu-ray of that and put it on a good big screen, and that would be one that, you know, I guess periodically they actually show that in the cinema, and that would be worth paying for. That would be worth seeing if you could go to a regular movie house with a big, you know, with a, you know, big screen and, you know, and act, you know, where they actually show it, that would be worth paying for to see, just, you know, just for the cinematography alone, because it's really spectacular. So, but, you know, that was a projection of the 1960s, you know, so that the parts that really don't hold up in that movie are, they were just projecting from then. And so since then, you've had other science fiction either written or in movie form or on television form, and they're sort of projecting current culture. And so that's what that always is, ends up what's happening is, you know, they project current culture. And so unfortunately now you've got this like a start new version of Star Trek Discovery or whatever it is, you know, where you got the social justice warrior type stuff going on, and they've got all these characters that are sort of backwards, wrong is right, right is wrong, and they're trying to basically say that everything's a shade of gray, there is no right, there is no wrong, or that if there is anything right, that it's really wrong, and that wrong is right, and, you know, everything's backwards. And so that's basically what's projected into the science fiction that we're, you know, even the, you look at that Lost in Space thing that's on, I think it's either on Amazon or Netflix at this point. Same thing. It is, it's a projection of the current thing, and they're and of course what they want to say is that women are strong, women are powerful, men are just ignorant dolts, worthless, kind of worthless, ignorant dolts, and that the women are the heroes or whatever. You know, and so, whatever. You know, so. But the, at the end of the day, you need, in order to have a good story, you've got to have a morality play. Wrong versus right. You know, and then, you know, so you, and then you have heroes and villains. And that's what makes a good story. And that's, you know, so everything that's any good is a morality play. And so everything that's any good has to, you know, basically being say something about your character. As opposed to, you know, and if it's got the wrong message, like the, you know, I always use a movie, the classic movie, you know, Twister is the classic, there's an example that I give of the classically bad movie that's got, you know, mostly great special effects, and there's no plot. You just have these people that are shacking up and can't get along and blah, 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 and the storm gets them. Good for the storm. I found myself sort of, you know, cheering for the storm. The storm's the hero of the movie. So, but, so, you know, the science fiction is simply a projection of when it's written. So I've got an audio clip here from Joel, and it's only a little over a minute long, and I've already listened to it, so I know what he's going to say. And, that is actually going to fit in pretty well. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Joel Lachlan here. Taking a break before I go into some heavy work here for a client. And you haven't had a show, but then I haven't left a message. So something I was thinking, been thinking about is all those things that we thought about when we were growing up, you know, like things like flying cars, or like if you watch Demolition Man, they had self-drive cars, you know, things of that nature are going to require us to give a little bit of control back to machine, not back to machines, but to machines. But are we willing to do that? I have the Echo Dot as well as the Google Home Mini. I usually use the Home Mini. My wife uses the Echo Dot. And you have to, those are the things that we always thought we wanted, but now we're kind of having second thoughts. Just something I've been thinking about.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. You know, if you go back to this Star Trek, you know, where they're, you know, talking to the computer, and then the computer responds, and, you know, the computer, you know, and then the computer is able to do things for them. You know, and that sort of works, you know, obviously it works really well in a scripted story. But life is not always, I think the difference is life is not scripted. So, you know, and, you know, what happens in life is more akin to the variables that happen out on the highway, you know, in a real world highway. You have lots of variables that, you know, versus the other alternative is where you, like, you have a roller coaster is a sort of a closed system, and, you know, where the there's just a strictly fixed number of variables. And as long as you do the maintenance to the system, make sure all the components haven't changed too much or replace worn components. As long as you do that, then the system is going to behave in a very scripted way. And, you know, so I think the same thing is probably a variation of that sort of applies to why does it work so well in the movies? Why do these things work so well in television shows? Because that's a scripted fiction versus the real world. You have, you know, you can talk to your device, and, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to ask it what time is it, or what's the temperature, or set a timer, add this to my grocery list, that type of thing. It's you know, as long as there's not too much background noise, which is a variable, by the way, or play, you know, tell it to play music, or look something, search for something, look something up for you. Those sorts of things are, you know, you can kind of interact with it a little bit, as, you know, and it has a limited practical application, but it doesn't really work as well anywhere near what it does in a scripted science fiction story. And, of course, in a scripted science fiction story, then, you know, when you were watching Star Trek, you know, when I was watching Star Trek when I was a kid, you know, you think, oh, isn't that neat? Well, you know, they can just talk to the computer and it does things, or it tells them things. Well, you know, you don't think about the fact that the computer's monitoring them all the time, you know, and then you live in the real world, and then, you know, that drives some people crazy, that the thought that they might be someone's listening to them, or a machine is recording everything. Or even if they know that the machine isn't recording everything, it's the machine's actually listening all the time, and then there's always this idea that someone could tap it, which is very technologically possible. But they can also do that with your cell phone, and they've been able to do that for many years, going back to the days of analog phones. You know, so that's the, you know, with the difference, you know, is kind of scripted. Oh, isn't this neat? I remember watching the Jetsons when I was a kid, and I'm sure that, I don't know if the cartoons, I'm assuming they're still around. I don't know if there's any new episodes of it, but I'm sure every kid has watched the Jetsons, because that's been around forever. Everybody, you know, kind of knows what that is. And so they had their Rosie the Robot and the flying car and the different things. You know, and people thought, oh, wouldn't that be neat to, you know, kind of live that life, or, you know, have that. But, of course, it's just a scripted, it's a scripted world. It's a scripted fictional world. You know, even this, you know, I was talking earlier about the series that I'm listening to on the audiobook from YouTube, the Rendezvous with Rama. That's just a scripted, story, you know, and kind of projected from the time it was written of what, you know, what might be. And some of the stuff, you know, seems plausible, and some of it not so plausible, and some of it, you know, especially where, you know, the the characters are doing certain things. It just it kind of makes me groan once in a while, you know, because it's just not realistic. So, but it should have been obvious, I guess, at the time, but it wasn't. You know, so what's you know, I don't know. Some of the stuff just isn't realistic, and so the things that happen in a scripted fiction are not the real world, and but people think that they can script things. They think that they can script. People think they can script other people's lives, and this is how they can live. Well, you know, it doesn't work that way. All you can do is really, at the end of the day, is you know, you have to have your own internal guidance mechanism. Your own internal, and it's not even. It goes beyond simply a set of principles. You know, you can have written principles, like, you know, the Ten Commandments is a set of written principles. You know, thou shalt not do this, and don't do this, don't do that. But, and, you know, do this and do that. But that's designed to keep you, you know, the Ten Commandments are sort of designed to keep you from, you know, kind of contained and you know, falling farther. But the real ideal, the ideal state is to be able to find your, you know, in this case, find your creator, find whatever that internal latent conscience, you know, that latent conscience that we have, make friends with it, and then let your conscience be your guide, says Jiminy Cricket. Let your conscience be your guide, and then you sort of know the difference between right and wrong, and then you can go out in the world with all the variables, and you always know the right thing to do. It's always kind of revealed to you right at the time. In sort of real time. You know, so, but I'd say overall, the reason that, you know, now people are sort of expressing, you know, they're kind of thinking, well, we don't really, you know, these things seem so neat, but maybe, you know, they've got big downsides, maybe we really don't want them. I think people are just running into the difference between, you know, sort of a, what they thought, you know, could be from a script, you know, a world that could be from a scripted drama that they've fallen in love with versus the real world. The real world is always vastly different. You know, there's, you know, you watch any science fiction, you know, and we'll just pick science fiction because it makes it really obvious. You watch any kind of science fiction and there's always a vast difference between that and the real object. You know, and then of course you have the, a lot of the people I think are disillusioned, you know, because they're sort of, there's, I guess the word technophile would be as good as any, you know, because you have a, you know, sort of a modern technophile would be, you know, and the idea that I have of that person would be someone that's just into tech. They say I'm into technology, and they sort of, they're, you know, want the latest, you know, they're into whatever the latest and greatest Apple would be able to come up with, and it kind of turns into a religion, you know. So you have a technophile, you know, in the same way you'd have an audiophile, which basically they're sort of worshiping their audio equipment. Etc. You know, pick your various poisons, you know, that people get into, you know, and whatever they get into gets into them, and then at some point they may see the demon behind it, and then they're off on something, you know, they back off and they're on something else. Technology itself is neither good nor bad. It's just, but some things can be done and some things can't. So are we going to have flying cars? No. It's not realistic. It's just not a realistic thing. Self-driving vehicles? No. I just don't see that happening. You know, again, it works good in, you know, you find your, pick your movie where there's self-driving vehicles like the Johnny Cab in the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, you know, based on the Philip K. Dick book. What was the name of it? Total Recall. It was a Philip K. Dick. That was based on a Philip K. Dick book or short story, one or the other, but it was his idea that they created Total Recall from. So, but you know, you had the Johnny Cab. By the way, the Johnny Cab tried to kill. If I'm remembering correctly, didn't the Johnny Cab try to kill Arnold Schwarzenegger? So, there you go. So the idea of, I don't know, the self, you know, what's the deal? Why can't you just live, you know, do you have to have everything provided for you? Do we need to have everything provided for us? And it's just, you know, we don't have to do anything. And it's just, we're sort of, are we so spoiled by our parents that everything has to be done for us and we don't do anything for ourselves? You know, and that's kind of, you know, it's really rather ridiculous when you think about it. Why can't people drive themselves? Of course they do. Most people, and I think the people that want the self-driving vehicles are probably the same ones that have been the most spoiled. You know, so self-driving vehicles works great in it works great in a scripted drama, but not so well in the real world. You know, same way with take the science fiction part out of it. A lot of scripted dramas simply don't, unless they're following the classic morality play, then most scripted dramas are complete crap. You know, maybe they can be entertaining or whatever, but at the end of the day, they're garbage. They don't, you know, because all there really is that human beings are, and I think it's what most people are looking for, and maybe they don't realize it. But all there really is at the end of the day is, human beings are sort of in search of their character. What is right, what is wrong, and if you're not, you know, or if you're one of those people that's just, you know, always looking to hope, you know, hoping against hope that you find that that you're the right and wrong, that you're really God, you come into this world and you're really God, and you kind of go after all of the exciting things, and you know, and thinking that this is going to make you happy, or that's going to make you happy, or you take this drug or that drug or this food or that food, and it's going to make you happy. And of course, it doesn't. People become more and more empty as it goes along. They, from a character standpoint, they sink lower and lower. That's why, a little bit of the drug is you have to have more. You always have to have more cocaine or more marijuana or more food, more drink, more wine, more whiskey, whatever it is. You got to have more and more and more to try to achieve the same effect of distancing yourself from the emptiness. So I think there's probably a lot of people that are at this point becoming disillusioned, you know, sort of reaching the end of the line with kind of the technophile religion. You know, and so, you know, is a new phone going to make your life better? Well, not really better per se, speed things up a little bit. You know, if I get, you know, I'll get the Note 9 whenever it comes out, And even though the Note 8 is already a pretty mature device, but the Note 9 is probably going to have maybe a slightly faster processor. I'll take it. And I can use the faster processing with the, because I use my phone for sending the paper, capturing and sending the paperwork in a PDF form to my company. You know, in the old days, you go way back, before the scanning started, I would actually fill out the physical papers and then, total everything up and, put all the receipts in the thing and mail it in to the company through the mail. And then there was a phase where they had a sort of overnight service that was doing it. And so you'd put the thing in there and then the company would get it the next morning. And they'd have these designated drop boxes in a lot of different truck stops. And then the scanning thing started. It started out first, you could scan from your own computer. If you had a laptop, then you could just get the application and scan it and then send it to the company through the computer, if you had an internet connection. And then they started putting physical scanners in the truck stops, which those are still there, by the way. So there's still physical scanners in a lot of truck stops, and so a lot of drivers still use those. But for several years now, I've just used the app, the Transflow. I'm using a Transflow app on my phone. It's called Transflow. And I use that on my phone, and it's kind of tied back, when I registered it, with my company. It's sort of tied back to my company, and whenever I use that to take pictures of uses the phone as to, kind of takes a picture of the documents, each page, and then it converts it into something that looks very much like a scanned image, and it kind of straightens it out, because you can have weird weird lens distortion when you use the camera at close range to take pictures. You get some image distortion, or I could be off a little bit, and everything sort of you end up with more of a parallelogram than a square image, for example. And so it just crops it at the right place. You crop it at the right place, and then it straightens it out and sends it off, and it bundles it bundles it all up into a PDF and sends it off to the company, and they get it immediately. That reminds me, I've got a trip to send off, I think, that I unloaded earlier. So I'll take the faster phone, because there's a little bit of a lag time while it processes, and I haven't timed it. It's no more than maybe 2 or 3 seconds where it's, from when I accept the document, and it sort of crops it and turns it into the scanned document. That takes a couple of seconds. So if I've got a lot of scanned pages, and those seconds do kind of add up, and that's the slowest part of the whole process, apart from, kind of physically putting the pages out one at a time, and then, getting in a flat spot so that I can take a picture of it. So, so I'll take the faster processor. But as far as making the thing prettier, or, trying to, make it more desirable, faster processor is about the only thing they can do, that appeals to me. The rest of it, we've already got the ultimate convergence device. You can make a faster processor and somehow improve the battery life, and that's about it. But as far as, you're not really going to be able to add too many more functions to it, because, you've already got cameras on it. You've got, it can play back music. It can play videos. It's got an permanent connection to the internet. Improve the battery life, make the processor faster, and I'm happy with it. I'm happy with the form. You got of course, people are, you know, some of the TV shows now or whatever, and the movies, they've got these folding devices and they fold it out and it makes a bigger screen or whatever. You know, and that looks, you know, of course, that looks cool in a scripted drama. Real world, not so much. You know, I don't, you know, that's not, it's not practical to unfold something and then have a bigger screen. You know, that's something that's, you know, looks great, you know, from a cinematography standpoint, it looks great in scripted drama. Real world, not so much. Sorry. So there's a lot of things that look cool on TV or in a movie, in a scripted drama, but don't really work so much in the real world. And there's a lot of things that work in the real world that don't really translate well to, you know, they don't, you know, as far as stories go for scripted dramas. You know, which a scripted drama is basically a, you know, it's a story, but it's not a, it's, you know, it's a story that's trying, you know, that's trying to imagine and compress random events. But, you know, at the end of the day, because it's scripted, they're not random. You know, so then you can, you know, if you make a scripted drama from a real-world story, something that really happened, of course, then they have quote-unquote poetic license because the real thing is pretty boring, and they try to make it, you know, they'll add elements to it to make it more exciting. It's got to be more exciting. You know, or it's too slow or whatever. You know, you don't want to, you know, are they going to show people that just go about their ordinary lives and nothing ever goes wrong, or very few things go wrong, nothing dramatic happens? Of course not. You know, they're not going to show somebody go about their normal day and, you know, there, nothing happens that's not expected. Of course not. So, but, so life is not a scripted drama. And the road, you know, like I say, the translating that into like self-driving vehicles, the road, you know, the real world is not scripted. It's got all kinds of variables that can happen. You never know what's going to happen. So, and I don't, you know, I know they're trying, you know, as far as the flying cars, they're trying to say, well, we're having these electric helicopters that fly people around or whatever. You know, and of course the thing can only fly for about 24 minutes, so it's kind of like flying in a giant drone, you know, that can only fly for so many minutes. And again, I mean, in a city, maybe, of course, it's going to be very costly, you know, to take a flight like that. It's going to be pretty costly, I would think. And, of course, then what happens if something goes wrong with a battery? Batteries aren't perfect, I can tell you that. Lithium-ion batteries are not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. As much as we'd want them to be, they're not. You know, so would you trust your life with one of those things? I guess we do. We, you know, people do it every day. There's millions of people sleep with their phones. So we're sleeping with you know, potential fire hazards. So maybe so, I don't know, but that's it's one thing if something kind of goes wrong on the ground. If your car breaks down, you can always pull off on the side of the road. Or if you run out of fuel, you can always pull off on the side of the road. But if you're up in the air, something goes wrong, you're probably dead. Human beings don't splatter very well. So, you know, and of course, a lot of the things that they show in movies sort of defy the laws of physics. You know, because they show some sort of jet or, you know, and it's very vague, and they, you know, maybe they talk about how it works or whatever, but it's just techno babble. Of course, a lot of the Star Trek's, you know, Star Trek was, you know, full of techno babble. you know, and a lot, and it was essentially meaningless. So communications can improve. That's, you know, at the end of the day, knowledge gets better. Technical knowledge gets better. Communications is one of the things that always can improve. But at the end of the day, human beings, the, you know, it's kind of our morals sort of, you know, go up and down. So it's sort of like a sine wave. You know, maybe at some point they can be better, and at other points they can be worse. But overall, it, you know, that part doesn't change. You know, and of course, in a lot of these stories, you know, science fiction type stories, they sort of like to project how, you know, some of the, they'll talk about how, you know, well, people did this and people do that. And, you know, in one of those, one of the audiobooks that I listened to, I don't remember now which one it was, there was this, you know, the, one of the space, the captains in this, whatever the, I'll think of it in a minute, whichever one of these audiobooks I was listening to, one, you know, he had two wives, you know, and so they didn't, you know, they were just kind of talking about, I guess, polygamy. So he had a wife on Earth, a wife and a family on Earth, and a wife and a family on Mars, and so he, you know, anytime he sent a message, he'd just make one message and kind of make it generic for both wives and families. And they knew about each other, supposedly, too, but they never met, you know, so that's not even realistic. You know, so they, but, and a lot of times in science fiction, they'll kind of project how people could live, and, you know, and this is how they live on such and such world, or this is what, how they live now, you know, and it's not realistic because human nature doesn't change. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we need some sort of value system, and if we don't have it, then it becomes whatever the group thinks. For a lot of the people, it becomes what the group thinks, or you can have, and then it kind of depends on which group you fall in with as to what the group thinks, and most of those, you know, then the people are miserable, even if they're following what the group thinks. They're not happy people. The only way you can really be a happy person is if you've got your own internal guidance system, basically. If you've got your own internal guidance system and you're sort of friends with it, and then you can kind of make real time, you know, and it sort of guides you in real time as to what to do. Call it common sense, call it gut reaction, whatever you want to call it. It's the same, it's kind of all boils down to the same thing. A conscience. If you live by that, if you're friends with it, you don't want to violate it, violate the sanctity of it, then you're always going to do what's right. And you're never going to be, you're never going to be unhappy. Because even, you know, it doesn't, then at that point, your happiness does not matter. It doesn't matter what the external circumstances are. That's what a lot of these, a lot of books, you know, all kinds of books miss. You know, what really makes you unhappy. You know, if they try to describe tyranny and what have you as making people unhappy, or their poverty making them unhappy, that's not what makes you unhappy. What makes you unhappy, we go back to resentment. And resentment separates you from who you could have been. Resentment separates you, you know, it helps you, you drive a wedge between yourself and your conscience. And that's where people make the mistake. That's where we as human beings lose our happiness, you know, our potential well-being. Peace that passes all understanding. Via resentment, we sort of separate to become our own God. separate from the real God, to become our own God. And of course, that can't be. And so that's what drives people to find all kinds of other false gods. And that's where they go wrong in scripted fiction. Scripted fiction, scripted stories, they can kind of make things seem like, well, this is how it works, or that's how it works. And it's kind of based, a lot of times it's based on kind of pop psychology type stuff. But at the end of the day, if they were really going to be realistic, get rid of your own resentment, and things at that point, things really, that's the only thing, and you get rid of your own resentment, and then the difference between right and wrong, then you can, kind of do your morality play, and then you've got a, that's a good story that you can, kind of weave your story around that. Because otherwise, then it just kind of turns into a wish list of how things could be. Whether it's sci-fi wish lists, technophile wish lists of, how the world could be, and we'd all be happy because we had to, this or that. Or this is how, a wish list of how humans would behave, and we're gonna have our own utopia. And of course, we can't have, that it doesn't work. There's no such thing. We cannot program, as human beings, we cannot program utopia. Utopia, if you want to, in a sense, utopia is, we can't find it as a group. We have to find, it can be found, individually we can find it. But it's not really a life not the way we think it is. We can just program our civilization the right way and we have utopia. It doesn't work. You've got to, individual people have to want to do the right thing. Individual people have to have their own internal guidance, their own connection with their creator. Then if you have a society of people and not everybody's going to do it, but if you have the majority of people that are good-hearted and they want that, want the right, and they're friends with their conscience and they want to do the right thing, then that makes all the difference between a happy life, happy society versus some shithole, hellhole, pardon the French. So, but again, with a risk of being repetitive, I think that the reason people are having second thoughts, maybe if they are with the technology, is because I think probably many people are sort of seeing that it wasn't the utopia, wasn't the great thing that they thought. At the end of the day, it really wasn't going to make them happy. It was just making them excited, and they were sort of confusing excitedness with happiness. And of course, it doesn't last. It's just a temporary distraction. And things that are presented in scripted drama form may seem to work, may seem desirable, but the reality, sorry, it's very different. Reality is always very different from any kind of scripted fiction. the best scripted fiction, you know, kind of really illustrates the difference. You know, it's a morality play, and it kind of follows basic moral tenets. Then you have good stories that, you know, where they have some sort of redeeming value. So, anyway, I've been talking a long time. Better cut this off and get it put together and uploaded. So, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.